And now to bring us the sermon at this afternoon, Mr. Cliff Wickman.
Thank you, Mr. Martin. Good afternoon. Last time I spoke to you, a couple months ago in February, I reminded you of the vastness of the universe. You remember the two numbers that I gave you? Probably not. 100,000 and 2 trillion. Remember that sermon? 100,000 was 100,000 light years across the galaxy, and the 2 trillion was 2 trillion galaxies in the universe. But the point of that sermonette was not that we are insignificant, which we are, but that wasn't the point. The point was that God is in a world which we call spirit, which is not far from us according to the Bible. Even it is not a physical distance away from us. But when you think about how insignificant we are, it is easy, I think, to get the feeling that God may not be hearing you. You know, he has created us. We know he is. We know he has unimaginably great power, ability, but that doesn't assure us that he's paying attention to us. You could get the feeling that God has probably bigger and more important things to do than to listen to me or to you, as insignificant as we are. So how do we know that he's listening to us? That has been my meditation today, in the last few days, and I want to mention it today. There's one big proof. There's just one big proof that God is listening, and that's what I want to talk about today. What is that proof that God hears you? One proof that he did not create the world to toy with it. That's my title today. God is not toying with us. But he created it for our good. And our faith, I think, is rooted and grounded in the evidence, first of all, of God's existence, isn't it? It has to be the beginning, I think, of faith. Faith starts in the fact that, you know, here we are. Our bodies are functioning, our minds are functioning in ways we can't even understand. You know, we're living amidst living wonders that no human intelligence can duplicate. It starts with God as the creator, the designer. Okay, so we're created, but so what? Right? We only get a few years of life here on this little planet. How do we know the Creator hasn't gone off or isn't toying with us? He went to the trouble to build this beautiful spaceship that we're traveling on, but now its operation seems to be on automatic. You know, for many, many generations, it goes on and on. Doesn't seem to require the attention of the Creator, so how do we know that we are really valuable to him? One proof. Just one proof, I think. Jesus Christ. Now, Jesus Christ is just one man. His life and death wouldn't seem to prove anything of itself. But Jesus Christ is more than one man. He is the climax of a long story. First, you have to know that Jesus was who he said he was, don't you? The whole story leading up to him has to be the proof of that. The whole story is 4,000 years long, up to his life and death. The better you know it, the more you are convinced that he was who he said he was. But then, after that 4,000-year story comes the climax, right? The death and the resurrection of Jesus brings the whole story of 4,000 years into focus. It was a great demonstration of what we believe. One was a demonstration by Christ himself. Two were demonstrations by God the Father, but they were necessary things that had to be done. They were great demonstrations. The first great demonstration, I would say, is the obedience of Jesus. Jesus' example. This is well summarized in Philippians by the Apostle Paul in Philippians chapter 2, verse 8. Just one verse, I'll cite it to you. Philippians 2:8, being found in fashion as a man, he humbled himself and became obedient unto death, even death of the cross. This could not have been more dramatically demonstrated, could it? We follow the faith of Christ, We are told in the New Testament to have the faith of Christ, that is to follow in his steps, not to die in crucifixion, hopefully, thankfully, but to be his disciples is to live by every word of God just as he did. And he demonstrated it to an extreme in that demonstration, did he not? He walked straight into his death by crucifixion. He deliberately incited his enemies, and he caused them to kill him. He caused it to kill him at the right place, at exactly the time and exactly the way that the Bible said it would happen. It was his demonstration of the extreme obedience of his example. That's demonstration number one. Demonstration number two was by God the Father. That was a demonstration of what God can do. I would cite one verse here, Romans 8:11, that points out that the resurrection was a great demonstration. Paul wrote, "But if the Spirit of him that raised up Jesus from the dead dwell in you, he," God the Father that is, "he that raised up Jesus," or Christ, "from the dead shall also quicken your mortal bodies by his Spirit that dwells in you." Jesus Christ made that great leap to spirit. You know, there had been resurrections in the Bible, at least, for example, Lazarus' resurrection, but no man had ever been resurrected to spirit before. No man ever knew that God would do it or could do it, that he could make offspring out of mortal human beings. And so the resurrection was a demonstration of what had never been done before and has never been done since. But now we know it can be done. But thirdly, the third demonstration was God's serious commitment to us, to mankind. That is the great value that he puts on mankind. That's my point today. My point is that God is not toying with humanity. And there was a great demonstration there. I would cite 1 John. 1 John 4 and verse 9. Just one verse there. In this, John says, that is in his God's personal sacrifice that he made, was manifested the love of God toward us, because that God sent his only begotten Son into the world that we might live through him. It's mentioned other places in the Bible. For example, Paul says virtually the same thing. I'll cite another place, Romans 5:8. Romans 5:8 says something similar. Paul wrote, God commends, or God proves his love toward us, that he's not toying with us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. This was a demonstration of God's own feelings, was it not? Not just his ability. It was a demonstration of his ability, but it was also a demonstration of his intent and his concern for humanity. There is no other assurance that we, as small as we are of value in the big scheme of things. We know we're complicated, you know, beyond description, but we also know that with our foibles and our comparative ignorance, we're not worth really very much, at least it doesn't seem to be. But this proves that to God we are. The sacrifice of his one Son, that is, if you have proven that he is the Son, is the only assurance that he does value us. Now consider that we couldn't know this if we didn't have the scriptures. Consider knowing this if you didn't have the Bible. You know, religions without God's revelation have invented gods, generally invented gods with human tendencies. Take the Greek mythology, for example, the gods of Greek mythology. Those gods ruled over men, at least in their imagination, with no purpose other than to get men's worship. They loved to be worshipped. Men ignorantly worshipped them in fear that if you didn't worship this god, he would do something bad to you. And the gods were thought to do bad things. Time and chance happens to us all. Bad things happen to us. But in their mind, God was toying with us. The gods were moody and unpredictable. And those gods made no demonstration of their care for mankind. Their chief god, for example, Zeus, he engineered the Trojan War. Poseidon would cause earthquakes and tidal waves. Those who weren't pleasing him, he'd cause shipwrecks and drownings. To the Greek gods of imagination, then, humans were playthings, little things to please God with their worship. So the gods were toying with them, they thought, with punishment or reward, depending upon how well you served them, how much you pleased their human-like emotions. And it was the same with the gods of Egypt and Babylonia. They had to be appeased to keep from being angry. There was, in fact, also such a case in the New Testament, that idea of a toying creator. Certain Jewish philosophers, and I've talked about this at length before, under the influence of Greek ideas, actually came to believe that the God of the Old Testament, the God who was the creator, was a fallible God, that he was subject to ignorance of his own not being the true God, and that he was vain like the Greek gods. They concluded the creator of the physical world was not the true God, but vainly wanted to be worshipped by us, and so he kept us in ignorance of our divine selves. These teachers called themselves Christians. But it was against these ideas that God toys with humanity and keeps us in ignorance of the true God that Paul and the apostles wrote the New Testament to preach the true gospel as they did. They proved that the purpose of mankind was not hidden by God. On the contrary, it begins to be revealed in the Old Testament in Genesis 1, where God creates us in his image, and it is finished. In the New Testament, it is finished with the sacrifice of the Son that demonstrates the importance of mankind to the Creator. Jesus is the actual proof, then, that the Creator has not gone off and left us. He only has our good in mind. Only the Bible tells us that, but it's not revealed until the New Testament, is it? We start with the foundation of the Creator in Genesis. We add the law, which provides a successful way to live, and we learn more from the prophets and the writings about a Messiah who will come and reform humankind and add that final blessing. But by the end of the Old Testament, we still do not have a great demonstration of what a perfect man looks like. Do we? We've not seen it. But as John wrote in his gospel, grace and truth come by Jesus Christ. He is the climax. His was the demonstration of one so obedient that he would walk into crucifixion, just because God willed it. And by the end of the Old Testament, we don't know how a mortal man can make the jump to spirit. There's no such demonstration. Demonstration number two in the Old Testament. It was never done in the law or the prophets. As Luke wrote in his gospel, the law and the prophets were until John. Since that time, the kingdom of God is preached and every man presses into it. The resurrection is the first and the only demonstration of the jump to spirit. And those who believe it press toward it. So it's a cumulative process. Only revealed in the Bible, first God the Creator, then the Old Testament, and then the capstone. The first two demonstrations of Christ's self-sacrifice and God's resurrection of him. But then, my point for this afternoon, we see in God's own action that third demonstration. The great importance of him, importance to him, I should say, of the beings that he made in his image. You know, God would send the word. The Word became flesh. In some mysterious way, God sent the Word to become flesh, and he would offer him as a sacrifice of reconciliation. The most valuable thing that we can imagine that you could give, this, the life of your own child. As I say, it was a demonstration. It was the most dramatic demonstration that we could understand to prove that he is paying attention to us, that he is indeed invested in us. God is not toying with us.